All right. We're ready? Here we go. Okay, good morning, everyone. Bruchim Aboim. Welcome. Special thank you to Ida Crown for hosting us this morning. And welcome to everyone. Thank you to Rabbi and Dr. Rapp for joining us for this very special weekend. And a special thank you to the Friedman family for enabling this whole weekend. We thank Aliza Frank for hosting last night's Malava Malka. And this morning we are enjoying a joint presentation that brings together two worlds. So Dr. Rapp is a scientist, a professor, an academic, besides for being a mother and many other wonderful things. And Rabbi Rapp, besides for being a dayan and an attorney, is a Talmud Chacham. And to be able to have shared perspectives on one area of Jewish life, of halacha, is, I would say, perfectly in consonance what our kolol and the values of our Masorah hold dear. And that synthesis is what we are celebrating today. So we thank you all for coming. We thank the Friedmans for enabling this. If we have phones, we should probably silence them. And we're going to enjoy a joint presentation today about a topic which is informed both by science and from Torah, to try to explore the measurements of the Amah. And I'm not going to give away anything more than that, besides we're handing it over to the two of you. Thank you.
I'll stop.
Thank you.
You could sit or stand, but you could sit also if you want.
I'd stand. Okay, good. It's my exercise for the day. It's how I keep my girlish figure. It's very interesting. A little history we'll start with. In 1665, bubonic plague hit England. So it happens to be on my mind. And they shut down Trinity College. This is actually true. And the students had to go home for some time, and they had to play their basketball in front of no crowds. That part I made up. And among the students that were sent home was a fellow named Isaac Newton. And Isaac Newton went home, and he had some time on his hands, so he figured it would be appropriate to invent calculus. And in fact, that is how calculus was invented. So again, we at Yeshiva are trying the same idea. We're sending the students home and seeing what they could come up with, you know. The same Isaac Newton, who when he wasn't creating calculus and getting hit in the head by apples, was doing other studies. Come late, you have to sit in front. That's the punch. You're in the splash zone. So the same Isaac Newton who, when he wasn't doing these other exciting things, actually wrote an extensive treatise on the biblical Amah, the biblical cubit. Because if you read through the last few parshas we've been involved with, etc., with all the definitions, everything when it comes to defining the size has to do with Amahs, right? We know this is the size of the Aron, this is the size of the Mizbeach, this is the size of the Shulchan. Everything we're doing with involves Amahs. If we're not doing Amahs, we're doing a Tefach. There are six Tefachim, six fists in an Amah, which is a cubit here. And to this day, many of the halachas that we deal with on a daily basis involve the Amah. When you're building an Erev, there's allowed to be a gap up to 10 Amahs. How much is 10 Amahs? Well, you need to know what an Amah is in order to know what 10 Amahs is. When you're talking about the size of tzitzis, you have to know what an Amah is. Over and over again, you're going to build your sukkah, you have to know what an Amah is. So therefore, it's of a great value to sit back and try to get an idea of what is an Amah. Because in the studies that have been done, there's been a wide range. It's interesting, if you look at the Mishnayos, the Mishnah says that in Shushan Habira, out of all places, they had two Amah sticks. They had put to the side two rods, and these rods represented the Amah. Now, interestingly, the rods were two different sizes. Why was that? So the idea was in the Beis HaMikdash, in order to avoid Me'ila, in the event that someone would cheat the Beis HaMikdash out of something, that would be Me'ila, that is a terrible Avera. So when the people used to sell to the Beis HaMikdash, they sold using the bigger Amah, and when they took things back, they took it back using the smaller Amah, just to be safe. So it's interesting, these were located in Shushan Habira, these were taken with Achashverosh. But also you get the idea that the idea of the Amah was always somewhat a little bit off. How big is an Amah? So one of the original studies was done by the Nodi B'Yehuda. The Nodi B'Yehuda realized that, of course, there is a connection between volume and linear measure. Particularly, we have this by a mikvah. A mikvah has to be 40 saw. What is the definition of 40 saw? 40 saw is clearly a volume measure. Saw is related to lug, related to beit saw, related, etc. So that is the size of an average person. An average person, the Gemara tells us, is 3 amas by 1 amma by 1 amma. So therefore, we know that if we know what a volume measure is, you can convert that to a linear measure. And therefore, the Nodi B'Yehuda, using beitzim, eggs, decided to basically see how many eggs fit in a mikvah, right? And that would give you an idea of what an amma is. And that was a study done by the Nodi B'Yehuda. It's quoted in his Tziyam HaNefesh Chaya HaMsachim, and he found that the numbers just did not add up. He realized that the size of the amma was much smaller than he expected it to be. So he said that logically one of two things had to have happened. Either people have gotten bigger over the years, or eggs have gotten smaller. And he chose the second one, interestingly. I remember Rabbi Tzvi Savalovsky, a former roommate of mine, pointed out that it makes a lot of sense. People are familiar with the Flintstones. The eggs are huge in the Flintstones. And again, if you wanted to be machmir, you never saw an egg on the Jetsons. So obviously, over the years, the eggs have gotten much... It's very hard to argue with that. That is what Torah Mata actually is. So that was the argument. And therefore, the Nodi B'Yehuda came up with this idea that, in fact, that eggs used to be twice the size that they are, and therefore all shiurim should be double. Truth of the matter is, scientifically, that's likely not right. If anything has changed, it's likely that people are now larger than they used to be. If you ever go visit old Williams, Colonial Williamsburg, or Missouri Town out by Kansas, etc., you'll notice whenever you walk into one of the old buildings, you bump your head. Because whatever it is, because of nutrition, people are bigger than they used to be. And therefore, it would make sense that the amma, our average amma, is probably larger than the biblical amma was. So therefore, that's why a lot of people are machmir for this Nodi B'Yehuda. They assume that everything has to be double because of the size of the eggs. Truth be told, scientifically, it probably goes the other way. There are various opinions that have been offered over the years. The general range that we look at would be that a tefach is somewhat between 3 and 4 inches. And therefore, if a tefach is between 3 and 4 inches, there are 6 tefachim in an amma. That would mean that an amma would be between 18 and 24 inches, between 1.5 feet and 2 feet, and that is the rule of thumb. Rav Moshe Feinstein, who we tend to follow here in America, is of the opinion that a tefach is 3.6 inches, and therefore an amma is 21.6 inches. That happens to be a very useful number. It sounds like an odd one, but for example, when you build your sukkah, the wall has to be at least 10 tefachim high. What is 10 tefachim then? 36, which we also call a yard. That's it. 10 tefachim is a yard, according to him. Had the Rav Moshe come up with this, he walked around the MTJ base medrash and he said, every guy go like this. Okay, he took an average, that's what it came out to be. Let's go home. That was his approach to this. Now, it's interesting because over the years, there have been many attempts to use other ways of figuring out the amma, and we'd like to focus on an original idea today. I'll give you an example. Archaeology is very helpful when it comes to this. There are many things that have been found in Israel that are marked in the size of ammas that we can now measure. So, for example, if anyone went to Chizkiyahu's tunnels, right? So there's a famous inscription when you get to Chizkiyahu's tunnel, and among the things it says is that this tunnel is 2,000 ammas long. So that should be easy. Measure the thing, divide by 2,000, and go home. What are the problems with that? Well, it's two things. One is it's not a straight tunnel, right? So, but okay, that's going to give you a small amount of discrepancy. What's more important is what my wife would say is how many significant digits are in 2,000? One. meaning that that really sounds like they estimated. 2,000 amas does not sound like an exact number. It might be, but it also might be an approximation which would make a difference here if we would try to figure it out. There are various biblical areas that have been found. For example, Shlomo's palace in Livanon, they have found, not the palace, but you can see there the outside, you can see the footprint of where it was. And again, if you look in Tanakh, in the Lachim, we have the description of the size in Amos. If you take it and you just divide, you will be able to come up with a number as well. By and large, all of the archaeological numbers tend to cluster around a much lower size of an Amma, meaning that you're looking something more in the area of 16 inches of per Amma, which is not just on the lower end of what we have, but lower than the lower end, which, as we said, is not surprising, because if we look at our average Ammas and look at the fact that man has grown over the years, we are larger than we are, it's really scientifically not surprising that we ended up there. This idea, which we're going to present today, is taking a very different approach towards how to come up with the size of the Amma. I actually thought of this idea on a flight to Chicago many years ago. I believe, I can't remember whose wedding I was going to. I think it was a Frau Wiesenberg's. That's my recollection. And the idea which we will try to figure out is as follows. We like to use the Mishkan to get an idea. Now, in particular, the Mishkan, the building itself, was made of krushim. Krushim are these 10 amma tall wooden beams, and the wooden beams were 1.5 ammas by 1 amma. And on the... Oh, here we go. My able assistant. And these are the krushim. On the bottom of the krushim, you have what are called adonim. Adonim are these silver sockets, which are heavy silver sockets, which are put on the bottom, which give the strength for the krushim to remain standing. The krushim are solid silver. The krushim, we have the size of it in amos, and the krushim also in Parshas Pekudei, we get the weight. And the thought is as follows. There is a relationship between mass, volume, and density. And if we can somehow figure, you plug in the numbers, and being that we know what weight is pretty well, because we've been using weights straight from the time through Pidyon HaBein, we know what a shekel is. And once you know a shekel, you can convert it all the way to a kikar without a problem. So we know the weight, and we know the volume in our amas. The argument is, and we know the density, that should explain to us what an amma is through chemistry. Luckily, I brought a chemist with me.
It's not so much chemistry. It's more basic measurements, basic chapter one of either physics or chemistry. Okay, so this is a keresh.
There'll be a test afterwards.
10 ammas high. That part is not relevant to our discussion. 1.5 ammas wide, 1 amma in depth. Now, every keresh, the keresh is the board, has two prongs on the bottom. They're each 1 amma high. Each of these sits in an adan. An adan is a silver encasement, a cubic-shaped silver encasement, so it's kind of like a donut, except for that it's square, and its whole is square. So this is our adan.
Silver.
Two adanim for every keresh. The length of each adan should be...
Three quarters of an amma,
because this is 1.5 ammas,
right.
And we've got two. And the width should be, it's got to cover the whole bottom of the keresh, should be one. Okay. So we're going to take this adan off the bottom of the keresh, and we're going to put it over here with the hole facing you.
Yeah,
question?
Yeah, the
the prongs, are they...
One amma tall. They go straight through.
But are they one amma depth, or are they shorter? Because what is...
They reach the floor.
Straight through.
They reach the floor, but do they reach all the way to the edge of the carriage? Technically speaking, they probably don't.
No, we'll see. So they're... Right. Well, yeah. Let's see. If she, I think she can answer it now.
The Adan, if you look, okay, so...
So here's the Adan.
Right.
And the whole thing encases the Keresh. Right. Keresh goes straight through. And the width of this and the length of the two of them has got to be the same as... It's got to cover the whole bottom of the Keresh.
Right.
Okay. So this is now 3/4 of an Amma. This is what?
One.
Yeah. And this is?
One.
Also one. Great.
Okay. Yeah, but you don't know the size of the munchkin.
Please define munchkin.
Yes, we do. We do. Okay. We also know that each of these gaps is 1/4 of an Amma.
According to Rashi.
Okay, according to Rashi, each of these gaps is 1/4 of an Amma, which means how big is our donut hole? All right, so across here, how big does it have to be? Excellent, right? So 1/4 plus 1/4 plus 1/4 will give us the 3/4. So this is 1/4. And on this side, if this is an Amma, and this is 1/4 and 1/4, this has got to be?
A half.
A half.
Got your munchkin?
Okay. So we have a half of an Amma times 1/4 of an Amma. All right. So what is the volume of silver in each Adan? So the volume of the silver in each Adan.
According to Rashi.
The volume of the silver, according to Rashi, is the volume of the big box minus? Yes. The volume of the hole. All right. So, volume of the big box is what? Okay, so we've got 1 times 3/4 times 1. That's 3/4 amma cubed. Volume of the hole is what?
1/2
by 1/4, also by 1, right? We got some depth here. So 1/2 times 1/4 times 1 gives us?
1/8.
Alrighty. Let's put that over a common denominator. So what do we get? Okay, so we've got 6 minus 1, 5/8 amma cubed. Okay, so that's great. The volume of silver, according to Rashi, in the Adan is 5/8 amma cubes. All right, but we're not so sure what an Amma is. What else do we know about the Adan? We know its mass. We're told that the mass of the Adan is a kikar for each Aden, and a kikar is equivalent to, so let's just write this down, mass equals 1 kikar. A kikar, we know from a shekel, is 57.6 kilograms, or 5760 grams. Okay.
How accurate do we feel that is?
We believe it's very accurate based on the tradition that we have that Pidyon HaBein is 96 grams of silver. This is what's generally accepted. Some opinions go up to 68.4. That would be the high end if you're going to be used for a more machmir. This is, in terms of what we've been doing for Pidyon HaBein over the generations, this is the number we're going with. So we're pretty sure with it. So we're a lot more sure about the weights than we are about the length.
Why is it?
What? It has to do with Pidyon HaBein, because we've been using the same coins year in, year out. Our tradition is just stronger.
I think Rabbi Avadya Yosef has a Tshuva in Chavadas, where he quotes everywhere under the sun, and all the different shitas coalescing primarily around this shita.
Right. So we're more comfortable with this than we are about the Amma.
But from a halachic standpoint, I guess the 10 amos, I mean, we did, it wasn't as crucial that we had standard measurements throughout the generations.
But we don't have. We just don't have. This is the question of, we want to get the length Masorah to be as strong as the weight volume Masorah that we have. That's what we're trying to do here. Okay.
Okay, so we know the mass of this Adzan, 5760 grams. We also know the density. Why do we know the density? Because it's made out of solid silver, and you can consult any table or Google and find out that the density of silver is 10.49 grams per cubic centimeter. Okay, well, that is pretty cool, because if you have a density and you have a mass, then we can calculate a volume. Okay, density, mass, and volume are related. And we can calculate a volume. Oh, but I have a volume already. No, but now we can calculate a volume in a unit we understand.
Right.
We can calculate a unit, a volume, using grams, and using grams per cubic centimeter, I can now calculate my volume in
centimeters.
Cubic centimeters, and I know what a centimeter is. So if I can get a volume in cubic centimeters and relate that to a volume in cubic amma, well, hey, then I can figure out how many centimeters in an amma, okay? So let's do that. Let's get a volume. Okay, so what's the relationship between density, mass, and volume?
Density is mass over volume.
Thank you. Okay, density is mass over volume, which gives us that volume is mass over density. All right, so my volume is 10.49. Moshe, you want to man the calculator?
Okay.
10.49 grams per cubic centimeter divided by 5760 grams gives us a volume of
0.00182.
Nope, you know what? We are upside down.
Yes.
And nobody even caught me. Okay, we're upside down. Not density over. Max goes on top. 5760 grams divided by 10.49 grams per cubic centimeter. Now we are right side up. 549.09.
Yes.
Unit? Okay, good. Okay, so here's our relationship. We've got 5/8 amma cube equals 549.1 centimeters cubed. So let's isolate amma on one side and then take a cubic root.
Right.
So when you isolate amma on one side, let's do amma cubed equals, you're not done yet?
Okay,
are we done?
So
8 times 549.1 divided by 5.
Yeah, the cubes, the cube.
Not yet, cube root. First multiply by 8, divide by 5.
Okay, so 5 over 8 times.
8 over 5, 8 over 5, times 549.1.
878.
Okay, is that written down? Someone else doing it on their,
yeah.
Got it? 878.
Five, six.
Can't do this, okay. So 878 cubic centimeters, and the last thing we have to do, one more thing here, take the cube root.
Yeah.
So let's take the cube root of this, and we get 1 amma. Yeah, your phone doesn't do the cube root.
Yeah.
Raise the cube root.
Oh,
that's
what
that sure. 878.
Okay, and the last thing we'll do is convert it to interest for the benefit of those of us who live in the U.S. So 9.58 divided by 2.54 gives you what? How many inches is that?
3.77.
Say it again?
3.77.
It's not supposed to be so small. There's something wrong here with the numbers. Okay, let's backtrack. 5.7. Oh, this is wrong. We need another zero here. Right? We need another zero back here. There we go. Right? Our conversion was bad there.
So okay. They just move over that one.
Okay, move over that decimal place.
Now cube root that.
Now and
5/8 that.
It's 8 times 549 point.
And the cube of 8780.
5.
That's be 10 times more again.
This number is not right. 549 8 divided by 5. Okay, this is, yeah.
So this gets a zero.
8786 cubic centimeters. Take the cube root of that. Gives us 20.6
centimeters.
Divide that by 2.54 to give us a number of inches, and we get 8.12 inches, which is not right. Because remember, an amma is how many tefachim?
Six.
Six. And a tefach is how big?
Three.
Kind of like a fist. Six fists, that's definitely too small. So where did we go wrong?
Oh, here I am to clean it up again. You know, one time I went to the stock show in Denver, and they measure horses in hand breaths. So I asked them, so tell me, how much is a tefach? I asked them in the, so according to the stock show in Denver, it's 4 inches. That is it, by the way. So we ran these numbers, and this is what we came up with, and I was very disturbed by this. Now, logically, let's think about what could be wrong here. What are the options? Where could we have gone wrong? And the truth is, logically, there's three things that could happen here. One is we are assuming that the silver we're using is pure silver, right? That doesn't necessarily have to be true. Now, would that be able to fix all the world's problems? Probably not, because remember, we've got to double this in order to get it back to a number that's within the range, and there'd have to be an awful lot of impurities to do that. Also, that would be against the Ramban. The Ramban in Parshas Naso, everyone remembers Parshas Naso, got so long because over and over we're doing carbon after carbon after carbon. When you finally get to the end of the carbonos, then all of a sudden it starts adding it up. Right? It says that it's 12. So we showed a mask, you know, it's not bad enough we have to sit through this. We could have done the math ourselves. So why does the Chumash bother adding up how much karosov there are and kapos there are, etc.? So the Ramban says to show that it was pure silver and pure gold. If you would melt it down and you would put it back together, you'd end up with the same exact amount. That's issue number one. Also, issue number two is it probably wouldn't give you enough. So therefore, there are two logical possibilities. One possibility is that when we take a look here, I'll be mad enough to use pink. This assumption, let's go back to the Munchkin issue, as it's called in the Rishonim. The idea that this is a quarter by a half, that is the opinion of Rashi. Rashi has that opinion, and according to Rashi, we've got a problem. However, were we to be cheaper on our donuts and more generous on our munchkins, and we would have something that looked like this, then it would work out. Right? Obviously, if the size of the hole is wrong, then the amount of silver here
is less, and therefore everything will work out to be better. Yes?
So the carriage itself was wood.
Correct.
And it was sikoy zahav, right?
Not on the bottom.
Not the adan is silver.
Right, but the sikoy zahav would be on the top
so
part.
So there was a veneer of gold. So even the peg, the munchkin, was also...
No. No. Again, it's a question to what extent it was tzipoy zahav, but only what would be shown would be tzipoy zahav. You wouldn't bother silver plating something that would be hidden away. That's A. B, the amount of tzipoy was microscopic. It was such a small amount, because if you take the amount of gold that they had, right, they only had 30 kikar for the whole Mishkan, and one kikar went to the menorah. And then... just the kaporis used a huge amount.
You're talking about gold, you're talking about silver. It's
gold. He's talking about gold. Right? So therefore, the amount that was there, it could not have been a significant amount. Even if they would have gone down to the bottom, it wouldn't have made a difference. So a second approach is to say Rashi's wrong. That according to the Shitas Rashi, it doesn't work out. And other Rishonim disagree, and other Rishonim say there was a bigger hole. And that was that. So that would be a second approach. You don't like to say Rashi was wrong. So the question is, okay, but according to Rashi, what was it? And the answer likely is as follows. We've been talking about donuts, but perhaps we should be talking about tires. What's the difference between a donut and a tire? One you can use on paste. What? Right. Correct. The donut has a hole where the munchkin used to be. But a tire not only has a hole there, but the tire also has a hole inside, it's hollow. So there's no reason to assume that the Adonim were solid, right? Therefore, perhaps the answer is that the Adonim were also hollow on the inside, and that, in fact, would explain this. It wouldn't help us with the Amma, but it would explain how this works.
Yes. The known is the mass of the Adonim.
Correct.
So you can't say the thing is 57 kilos if it's hollow.
Why not?
It's a huge amount of... It's a huge
width. Well, again, how thick are the walls? Yes, hollow, but you don't know the thickness of the walls. There could be... Meaning, you're assuming
you
that...
The thickness.
What?
The thickness of the walls are not.
No, the outer measurement is not.
Each Adon, there were two Adon for each of the crushing.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So, it was at a maximum, either 1.5 or 1 hour, each of the individual Adonim.
The Adonim were definitely an Amma by an Amma by 3/4 of an Amma. That's not negotiable.
Okay.
Right? And it definitely weighed a kikar. But the question was, did that kikar silver, was that enough silver for it to be solid? Or was there a gap in the middle? That's the question. And if there's a gap in the middle, then of course this isn't going to work out as expected, and everything would be fine. So when I first looked into this, I figured, well, who am I going to talk to about this? So I actually went to Rabbi Templer. He's a man of science, he's a man of Torah. I could explain to him my issue, so I showed him the calculations, and I said, the only thing that makes sense, according to Rashi, is that it was hollow. He said, yes, it was hollow. So I said, oh, how do we know? He said, you just proved it. Well, that was helpful, thank you very much. So interestingly, I'll just tell you that people remember Mendel Breitstein?
Yeah.
What?
First year of the Golo.
The first year of the Golo, correct. 2 years,
right? 2 years.
Twan Eiderkram also. Right? So Mendel Breitstein at the time was a Baal Tshuva. The Shabbos I was working this, we happened to have him over for a dinner. And I started explaining to the people at the table, I'm working through this problem. And he said, oh, it's hollow. I said, how do you know that? He said, Aryeh Kaplan wrote it in the Living Torah. And if in fact, if you look at the Living Torah, which in many ways is a lot better than our scroll, hate to say it, I like our scroll a lot. It, in fact, goes through all of these calculations in a footnote and explains that according to Rashi, you have to say that this was hollow. Similarly, if you look at Rav Chaim Kanievsky's Sefer on the time of the Krah, on the Chumash, he says that the same question was posed to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish, again, without having to go through all this, explained, oh, it's because the Adonim were actually hollow. So in fact, did we learn about the Amma from here? No, we learned absolutely nothing about the Amma. If you were hoping to go home with an answer, you're going to go home disappointed today. But in terms of, it's still, the science was very helpful in explaining to us what the Adonim were. That on our own, we would have never suspected it, but once you actually run the calculations, it is clear that the Adonim had to have been not like a donut, but rather, according to Rashi at least, the Adonim undoubtedly had to be like a tire, because if not, there's no way there was enough silver to make this work. We will just, I'll just comment that the use of the density of metals in studying the Mishkan is happens to be very useful in other cases as well, notably in the Kaporas. There was a study done, it's also, my wife could run you through the numbers.
Do we have time? How much more time?
Should we that you'll realize that the amount of silver that we have overall in the Mishkan,
gold,
thank you, is in fact not enough to make a kaporis according to the Chazon Ish. So,
how much did it weigh?
What?
That's the question.
You're about to find out.
Okay, so here's an Aron. The Aron is covered by a cover called a kaporas. Thin cover. The width is 2.5 amas. The depth is 1.5 amas. And the height of this kaporas is 1 tefach. 1 tefach. All right, so let's get a volume on the kaporas. We know that the kaporas is made of gold. We can get a density of gold and then answer that question of what is the mass of the kaporas? How many grams of gold in this kaporas? So let's get a volume. Let's do it in tefachim. So in order to convert a tefach in order to convert an amma to a tefach, multiply by 6. So to get a volume of the kaporas is 1 tefach, that's the height, by 5/2 times 6, by 3/2 times 6, which gives me 1 tefach. Okay, she missed class on Thursday, so it's payback. Okay. Meanwhile, yeah, go ahead. Your number?
No, it's not high calculation.
It's fine. Claire, no, not working?
15.
Someone want to do it on their phone?
135.
No.
That's not 15 times 9?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Ah.
135.
Husband's never right.
Human calculator. Tefach cubed. Okay? Now, the density of gold. You can look that up. The density of gold is it's a big number that I remember. It's 19.32 grams per cubic centimeter. All right, so we got to get our tefach into cubic centimeter, and then we can figure out how many grams of gold. So no big deal. 135 tefach cubed. How big is a tefach? Okay, so a tefach is between 3 and 4 inches, we assume. Let's start with 3. So there are 3 inches in a tefach. Okay, we've got to cube that. All right. Since we've got the density in cubic centimeters, let's get that in centimeters. 2.54 centimeters in an inch. All right, now we take our density. 19.32. grams per cubic centimeter, and that gives us, somebody have it? It's going to be very big, so let's get it in kilograms. 10 to the third grams in a kilogram. What do you got?
1987.
I think it's higher.
1987 is worth half five.
So I have someone else doing it on their phone.
All right.
I'll pitch Nate Adam. I need two. And then we go with the number. Just make sure you don't forget to cube. Yeah, that's why you need the calculator, not the phone. She has the same number as you?
Yeah.
What is it?
1039?
93. 93.5?
Kilograms.
That's a lot, right?
Yeah.
That's an awfully big number.
How many pounds is that?
Here's the thing.
2 kilos.
Right.
Here's the thing. If you plug in a 4 here, you get into even bigger trouble.
Right.
Right? Yeah. If you plug in a 4 here, you get a number that is a lot bigger than that. I've got something like 27, 35 kilograms. All right, that can't be true. One, because it's just way too big. But two, because we know that the amount of gold in the entire Mishkan was 30 kikar. Okay, how big is a kikar, remember?
57.
A kikar was 57.
26.
Okay, 30 kikar for the whole Mishkan. One kikar was 57.6 kilograms. We're over. We're over that. Okay?
Well, not with 1,000, we're not.
Not with?
Not with 1,093.
Yeah, somebody's got to give me the calculator back.
No, but they're right.
But that 1,093 is correct?
I mean, that could logically be true, but if
you know, this one works. Four does not work.
Right, three
four
works.
Four puts you over.
Three works, four.
We use all the gold.
Right, four, you know, you use more than all the gold.
Yeah, you want to, somebody want to run the numbers with four? So if you do it with four, we just got to change this. Okay? So just take this number, divide it by 27, and then multiply it by 4 cubed. Divide it by 27 and multiply it by
64.
64, that works. Okay? So with 4 inches, you get to, and what's 30 times 57.6 while we're at it?
I'd say 17.
Put it in the
calculator.
Which one? That's this number or this number?
Five.
This one is 1,000.
720.
Okay. And this number? This number divided by 27 multiplied by 64?
I got around 2,590.
Yeah, 2,592.
Beautiful. So, yeah. So 3 to 4 inches just isn't going to work on the tefach. How do we address that?
How do they carry the arm if this is what it is?
That's an easy one. I think it's a hard question. We know that the arm was no seyes no sof.
Okay.
Right? So therefore, that I don't care about that. We know from the story of Peretz Uzzah, those people who are dummy, meaning the women, they... They should understand that in the case where that there was a fellow who tried, who thought the arm was about to fall, and he dove to catch it, and for that he was given the death penalty. Please don't do that at home. So the question here is... What? Yeah, you give that hamshah. So the question is as follows. This number, using 3 inches... is high, it's heavy, etc., but it's possible. Meaning that this will take up around
little less than two-thirds of the gold in the Mishkan. And, well, what else do you need gold for after that? Well, the menorah is one kikar. What? Mizbach HaZahav you have, which
all
isn't...
All the veneers and everything else.
What?
All the veneers and everything else.
Right, so everything else is pretty much gold covering. So it's tight, but it's possible. Right? You could get by. The Chazon Ish number is impossible because you don't have enough gold even to make the kapores, little less the aron and everything else that has to be made out of the Mizbach HaZahav, the Shulchan, whatever else you're going to have to make. Therefore, a suggestion was made that this is a proof against the Chazon Ish because the Chazon Ish's calculations do not work out at all. This came out of Bar Ilan. They wrote this up, and they made the suggestion that this should be a raya, that the lower number is correct, because the upper number just doesn't work at all. The truth of the matter is, I wrote a letter to them, and I said to them, you know, there is an answer. And they said, yeah, we know there's an answer. It could be that this is hollow. So I said, no, actually, it can't be hollow. Because if you look at the Chumash, it says that it is miksha. What is miksha? Miksha? What? Hammered. You cannot hammer something hollow. That just doesn't work. But there's got to be a gap someplace. However, the Maharit, hundreds of years ago, explained as follows. When you look at the Chumash tells us that the kapores is 2.5 amas by 1 amas. It has to be exactly the same dimensions of the Aron. But in terms of the thickness, it doesn't say in the Chumash. It only says that in the Gemara. The Gemara in Sukkah tells us that it's an amma. It's an amma height. Tefach height. Thank you. And that, again, explains to us the size of everything. That's where we get the size of the Sukkah, arguably. That's what the Gemara discusses. However, what's not clear is as follows. But we are making an assumption that this thickness is true throughout the entirety of the kapores. Let's take a side cut-through view of the kapores, and it is suggested that the kapores doesn't have to look like this the whole way through, but it could just as well look like this. And therefore, it has the tefach height, but there's no reason to assume that it has to maintain the tefach the whole way through. So hundreds of years ago, right, the Maharit, one of the early Achronim, came out and said that he believes that the tefach, yes, in terms of knowing the height for the sukkah, you have to know what it is, but he has no reason to believe that that much gold was used the whole way across, and therefore you end up with a thinner middle than you have on the edges. Once you say that, then of course, no matter what your tefach is, since I don't really know what this is, I'll have plenty of gold left over to do whatever else I need. So again, this is a situation where no, I did not learn, I did not disprove one of the tefachim. However, that doesn't mean this wasn't important, because now I have insight onto what the kapores looked like. That now, in all likelihood, this opinion of the kapores, that in fact does not remain the same uniform thickness the whole way, but rather gets thinner in the middle, that of course would seem to make very good sense in light of what we've learned. So in sum, science is very helpful. It might not be helpful in the ways that we were hoping that it would be, but still it gives us insights into the Chumash that are definitely worthwhile. Any questions?
Yes. These are the Mishkan to do all these calculations. It doesn't sound like it's been universally used through the ages.
I don't know if they've had the density of metals through the ages.
Because I'm just wondering...
Right? Because you can't do this without densities of metals.
Within the context of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the width of the Aron, and the poles, and everything else, there's certain... You could just say that the Mishkan existed in the miraculous plane of existence.
Yes, again, in terms of, but we have a small list of the miracles of the Mishkan, right? The fact that the poles, you couldn't see them sticking out, that's on the list. There's no reason for us to be adding additional things than to assume that everything within the Mishkan just ignore the rules of physics and went its merry way. If it would have, I assume that would have been on the list.
So
So I have no reason to believe that anything other than what was listed is outside the realm of nature.
I apologize if I missed this, but I'm just wondering.
You'll get someone's notes.
Ancient gold artifacts and things, many of them are very thin. Mm-hmm. What about whatever kind of gold it was? I mean, if the gold was an alloy, even if we call it pure, there's no real pure gold.
Right, it wouldn't be strong enough.
Would the density be different?
Right, the density obviously would be different. And yes, it's true that the gold itself in its natural form just wouldn't be able to do this type of construction with it. The question is, though, the impurities, how much would it affect the density? And I think not that much. Again, to say this is exact, no. But I don't think, as we said, by the silver, I don't think it would really make up for the problems that we have at all. All right. Well, if there's nothing further, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for coming. And thank you so much for this fantastic and fascinating presentation. Yeah.